Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Lost Sheep Podcast. I'm Nazario Pangallo.
And I'm Cole Bissett.
And we have our lovely guest today, the Associate Pastor at St. Francis University Parish in Tuscaloosa, Father McGaughan. How are you doing, Father?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Yeah,
doing
good. Cole and I have talked about, you know, getting you on the podcast for a long time. Since the beginning, it was kind of our dream to get you were the star celebrity that we wanted to bring on. So we're very excited to have you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you all for inviting me.
Absolutely. So first, let's just dive into where you are right now at St. Francis. How long have you been the associate pastor here?
I've been here for, this is the second year running. Been here for a year and some months.
Okay. So, you know, how long have you been a priest?
I've been a priest for 14 years. 2024 makes me, that was precisely April the 9th. That was the day I was ordained. 14 years ago, so April the 9th, 2024 made me 14 years a priest.
Oh, congratulations on that achievement.
Thank you.
So could you, you know, just give us a little introduction to your background. I know you're from Cameroon, is that correct?
I am from Cameroon, born in Cameroon. My parents are still alive. We used to be five siblings. We lost eldest sister in 2017. She passed in 2017, so we are left four boys. One person is in Cameroon, one is in Germany, one is in the United States. He just got here about a few months ago, and I'm here in the United States. So that's pretty much my family background. So I went to the minor seminary for what we refer back home as college. I went to the minor seminary and then later on moved to the major seminary in Bangui, in Bamenda, where I did 9 years for priestly formation. So then I got ordained. I was first assigned to a little town called Mutengene, where I did a year. Later on moved to Mundimba, Indian Division, somewhere around where my diocese is now, presently. I worked there for 5 uninterrupted years. In 2016, I came to the US to visit, went back to Cameroon. I mean, when I came to visit, I never knew I was going to work in the US at some point. So went back, worked in the cathedral for 1 year, and then later on moved to another little parish, St. Paul's Parish, I was moved to Bangem, where I stayed for another 3 years before I was moved to the United States. And the Bangem Parish is the Ave Maria Parish, Bangem. So that has been my journey. And when I got to the US, I first worked at Prince of Peace in Hoover, later on moved to Talladega, St. Francis of Assisi in Talladega. And then I was moved to St. Francis of Assisi again in T-Town.
You've had a ton of moving around. Yeah. Has this all been your decision, or just the people above you, like, hey, Father, go here, go here, go here?
The movements have really not been my decision, because it's pretty much something came up and they needed a priest, and I am a priest, and I go. Personally, within the context of the priesthood, I've always told myself, I am a priest. If there are a group of people who need a priest, and I'm the one called to go, I go. I don't cling to people or to places.
No.
I was not ordained for a particular place or for a particular, you know, I was ordained a priest for all.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, it's been a personal decision. It's like, I'm always ready. I'm here now at St. Francis of Assisi in T-Town. I love T-Town. I love being here. I'm happy being here with you all. But if need comes up and I'm asked to move, sorry, I will go without thinking.
Yeah.
So that's my philosophy and that's my idea. And for me, that is the best way and that's the best idea, because if we start making preferences and we think this is better, that is not so. Jesus did not make preferences. His ministry was all inclusive. And sometimes, interesting enough, is the fact that the places you think, okay, this is where I really need to be, when you move, you eventually come to the realization that, wow, I was not supposed to be here. This is where I was supposed to be. When I moved from Talladega to here, like I've shared with you all, it was like, man, I just got to the United States. This is the third movement. I mean, what's going on? Is it that I'm not doing the job right? Is it that there's something wrong? But again, coming to Tuscaloosa, I'm living here for a year plus. I think it has dawned onto me that God needed me here, because there's a lot more I've been able to, not me doing, but like God has used me for, than I think he would have used me in other places. So I'm happy to be here. That has been the movement. So
I've talked to several different monks, nuns, priests over my years being Catholic, and I was wondering, was there a specific moment in your life that you knew you were called to be a priest? Like, how did you know that you were going to be a priest?
That is a very challenging question, which up till now, 14 years down the line, I can't really tell you that how I've managed it up till this point. And I can't tell you that it was at this particular point that I said, yes, now, no. God has just been performing his miracle in my own life. And it has all been... My mom tells me a story that when I was about 3 or 4, I don't remember. Because my mom is, he's one of his cousins, is an archbishop back home. So it's like at that time when he was made archbishop, there was all this beautiful technology was not found. So we had little recorded tapes that we used to play on radio to, you know, the ordination and all that. And I used to listen to it. At some point, she tells me, I stood outside one day and I said, in the local language, it was like, now you've become a priest, and I clapped for myself. She called me and I ran away. I don't know that story. So it was like, it was something that had always been there. But I was a young boy like any other one. Okay, I grew up like any other young guy. But you would see, I would say that in the course of my formation, they got to a point where I was like, I did everything to not continue. Everything to let them get me. But each time I went home, it was like, okay, Bishop would look at my report and say, oh, that's good. You're going, you have a wonderful report. You're going to the next class. I'm like, this guy's just let me, you know? But it's all interesting how God directs your path. If it's a call, if God calls you, we may delay. Others may delay us, but eventually we get to where God wants us to be. And if we don't, our lives are turned. Because now I am, as a priest, I think I don't regret being a priest. I am happy being a priest. It has its own challenges. It has its own difficulties, like every other walk of life. So, but then, if you are not called to it, and you force yourself to get into it, the challenge is exceptional. So we must make that distinction. But I must say, it is, that's really been a wonderful journey so far.
So over the many different Sundays here and different Sunday Masses, you have dropped some notable quotes during your homilies. The most famous being, Christianity is an action word. And every time you say it, I always get a little smile when I'm listening to it. And I was wondering, would you mind breaking into that quote for us? Like, what do you mean by Christianity is an action word?
It is lived. Christianity is not found in books. It's not in the carrying of Bibles, having 20 rosaries and having 50. No, all that has a way that it should transform itself into action. So if you can't transform that into action, then I tell you clearly that all what you carry and all what you're holding is just a waste of time. You should be able to live out, because what's the understanding? We're baptizing Christ. Christ lives in us. So the life we live is no more our lives, but the life of Christ that is in us. So the big thing is living out that life. Because many a times, many people will not even go back to read that Bible. But the way you will relate to them and witness to them, that is what brings about that transformation. Today we are talking about the Feast of St. Mark. Mark preached the gospel. How do you show that you know it's by witnessing? So witnessing is stronger than anything. At the end of the day, they say people will understand when they see. They understand more when they see. And remember the saying, action speaks louder than words. So that's my philosophy. Mm-hmm. And that is why I try to live it out. Relating with every and anybody. What stands in front of me and what I have as principle is a matter of going out and showing love. No matter who. I don't care what your color of skin is. I don't care where you come from. I don't care what. My point is, I see a human being in front of me and I have one obligation to show him love, because that is what Christ did. So talking about Christianity as an action word is in a bit to say, we can only say we are Christians by the way we live out that Christianity. It's not by how much we quote the scripture. It's not by how much rosaries we carry in our hands and wear on ourselves. But it's all that should transform itself into action, because that is where we know that you actually know what you are doing. So if you say that you are a Christian and you don't live it out, waste of time.
So you talked about relating and witnessing, and obviously I'm sure you haven't been on a college campus and all of your ministries. How has that been different? And, you know, relating to college students, as the majority of your time is around college students, how has that challenge been?
Well, personally, I love young people. That's me. I've always looked at young people as the church in the future, the generation that is coming. They are the ones who are going to take. So for me, relating with you all within the context of, because I've really not done ministry on campus. This is the first. But again, my love for young people and my push towards young people, it's that which motivates me to hang around you all. And hanging around you all makes me also young. I mean, somebody walked up to me and said, "Father, you look 35. I was like, "Sorry, I'm 40. So at the end of the day, I think the one thing that drives me and that moves me is that youthfulness, hanging out and trying to understand you all within your context and within the time in which you are living. Because that is the challenge most often. We try to, many adults want to remove the young people from within their context, let them live a life out of it. No. This is the challenge they are going through. This is the context in which they find themselves. How can we help them? If we ourselves within the same context are having challenges, what about the young people? So it's a matter of relating with you within your context, trying to understand you within your context, and making sense of whatever happens around you within that context.
And then Christ talks a lot about, you know, having that youthfulness to us, as you talked about, and being, you know, childlike.
Yeah.
And when you see college students, you know, they're trying to either rush through college, or they're really looking forward to that future or their future job. How do you try to, like, relate to them and talk to them, like, have that youthfulness and, you know, that childlike nature that Christ really wants to see from us? How do you try to give them that image and that message?
Now, we must make a distinction there. Childlike and not childish. That's the first thing you must understand. And the childlikeness means a total surrender to the will of God. What happens? Get a toddler. Pick him up. Throw him up. He smiles and laughs. He doesn't even think for one second that he could drop, break his head, break his arm. And there is that total trust in the person who has thrown him or her up. So much so that it's like, whoa, it's so nice being here. But that's risky. Okay? So the childlikeness is in that total trust in God. Knowing that God has a plan for your own life. Trust him, he's always there. From a human point of view, we will always try to, you know, want to get control, want to know what is going on, what will happen in the next 20, 30, 40 years down the line. That is humanness. But once we understand that we have a God that loves us, we do what is expected of us and allow God to do the rest. So if you are supposed to be going to college, go to college. Don't start dreaming about a job that you have not arrived there yet. Prepare yourself for that job by going through what you are expected to do here and now, such that you can achieve that goal that is in front. So the childlikeness will be, I trust in the fact that what I have in mind, what I think I want to do, I pray about it, I ask God for the inspiration, and ask him particularly that it should fall within the context of his plan, not my plan. Because when it becomes my plan, there is always a problem. Then we go back to that spiritual writer who says, we plan and God laughs. Why does he laugh? Because he has a plan laid out for you. You are there just being worried. I mean, and when you worry and you get so into not trusting, you are like sitting on a rocking chair. It rocks. You think you are moving, but you are going nowhere. So that is it.
So my question is a little less serious. Being on the campus here at Alabama, we're known for a lot of sports, football in particular. I'm just curious, have you been able to attend any of the football games here?
I did. Last year, I went to the LSU game and it was fun.
Oh, I bet.
Now, we didn't, I mean, from coming from Cameroon, football in America is not what we refer to as football. We call, soccer is referred to, you will call it soccer, but we will call it back in Cameroon, football. Okay? But this football is something else. I was thrilled. I've really, watching on TV has never really made an impact on me like the LSU game when I was sitting right there in the podium and seeing it happen. And I found myself at some point, run, go. After that I was like, where is he running to? Why is he running? Who is he? Quarterback, halfback, fullback, and all those backs. I don't know the names, but I know that the person who has the ball needs to run. So let him run. And Roll Tide.
to go off of football, we've heard some stories about, we played basketball with you at our search retreat last fall. Could you talk about a little bit about, growing up, you were a big basketball guy, I've heard. Could you talk about a little about your basketball story?
I was exposed to basketball when I was 13. That is when I just went to what technically we call back home college. It's much more secondary school, And when I got interested in the game, in my mind, it was clear to me. At that time, the Chicago Bulls was top. That was the team at the time when you had people like Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Jay Stockton, Dennis Rodman, who's this other guy now? That crew, that was, so I was so, carried away. In my mind, I knew that I was going to play basketball in the United States. That was clear to me. I knew that I was going to get into the NBA, go do some kind of college studies, and then get into the NBA, become an NBA star, have a wife, two kids, and that would be my life. That was clearly written in my, but I didn't know that God had a different kind of basketball laid out for me. And the basketball was supposed to be a Bible and to stand and preach in the United States. That's what. But I really, really, until date, I'm a lover of basketball. When I get home, if there is a game going on, you will find me sitting there. I'd rather not sleep or rather push something a little bit further to do it at a later time just because I need to watch this game and then get back to it. But I still play basketball. The moves are not as swift as they used to be in the good old days, but that's one fun thing I really love doing. So basketball has been really my game.
And you're talking about your childhood. I've never really met anyone from Cameroon, so this is a whole new thing. So I would like to know, what is like the Catholic community in Cameroon, or just the Christian community in general? Is there much of it there? How was it being raised there? Was there persecution there? Was it pretty free? Just give a little bit of insight into,
Well, talking about Catholicism back home, personally, my dad and my mom are fervent, staunch Catholics. My dad worked for the church all his life. So that goes to relate to why I could end up the way I did. But it would interest you also to note that there was never a day he pushed me to becoming a priest. He simply just looked at me each time, most especially my dad. He was like, okay, if that's what you want to do, fine. And he said nothing about it. I only knew that he was really interested in what I was doing when I was in third theology, when at the end of that year, I had to be ordained a deacon. So then he came up to me and said, okay, if that's what you want to do, know that we are all behind you. But the rest of the way was all my business. Now, Catholicism is one strong, I would say in my country, Cameroon, it's really one strong religion that is held by Christianity, yes, is the majority, but again, Catholicism is central. And I would not say we have that kind of persecution that we get with neighboring Nigeria and all that. Yeah, people differ in their faith, in their beliefs, but it's not hostile. It's not really hostile. we get the same challenges that we get here in the US in relation to being Catholic. So it's a global thing. It's not only here, you know, holding us for things that we stand for and say that, oh, why do you have to say that you are not respecting people's rights and all of that when it comes to things like abortion and all of that. So it's pretty much the same. But as a young person growing up, my parents went to church every Sunday. Going to church was a priority. Praying at home was a priority. So it was. I'm pretty much a cradle Catholic. So from that foundation right up to where I am today, it's all been Catholicism all the way. And at no point did I mean, say you had to break off for some time and then no. I mean, there's not. What reason could I give for breaking up? It's so sweet. So that's what it was like. I mean, so I hope I answered. Yeah.
Again, not a serious question, but the food is different in many different cultures. I'm sure it's all very different in Cameroon.
Very different.
Is it a lot better than it is here? And what type of cuisine are we talking about?
You don't have food in the United States. Get me clearly. All what you have, sorry to say, with all due respect, there's no food in the US. You don't have variety. My country is known for food. I mean, they just, if you talk about it, is enormous. Beef, fish, name it. Vegetables, all forms. I mean, when I look at around here, it's limited to either pork and chicken, and then you have basic burgers and those kind of. No. When we talk about food, we talk about vegetables, all kinds of vegetables cooked in different ways. The same vegetable could be cooked in 3, 4, 5 different ways. Soups, all kinds of soups. Soup here, soup there, soup the other. So, I mean, one thing that pushes me most often to go back home is the food. I need to go eat good food.
Are you a cook? Do you cook?
Before I came to the US, I never used to, but now I'm trying to cook. Well, it may not be as wonderful as it is back home, but I think it is decent. So,
I think you should cook Master Meal one day. That's what you're saying.
That would be a lot for so many. I mean, I can do something small for like 5-10 people, that's fine, that's okay. But that crowd, I mean, it needs a whole, you need a technical arm to be able to handle that.
Again, I'm going to shift the tone a little bit more to the serious side now. What's the most moving encounter you've had with an individual while being a priest? I know there's a lot of different stories from different people I've met that have had these really moving encounters with different people. And I was just wondering if you've had any types of encounters like that where you've just been really moved by someone throughout your priesthood.
Yes. My encounter with the person it would be so shocking for you to hear Father Tom. He's made a great impact on me. I've not seen a man. Don't ask me. I will not want to get into details.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a gift and a blessing. And I say that because 14 years as a priest, I think I've worked as an associate twice. This is the second time. All along I've been pastor. I mean, after ordination, where I was sent, the priest I was supposed to be an associate to went to Ireland he was sick and needed some medical attention and never came back. So I worked all by myself. So from day one, it was like touching, it burns you and it's like, oh, okay, I was not supposed to touch that. All right, I learned that now. So, but you know, having to come back and work with somebody who has been there and who understand how it is done. There are lessons that you learn that you don't need to sit in a classroom for somebody to teach you. If you are observant and you are ready to learn. This for me has been a really learning process. It's like you take a refresher course after 14 years. Or within the context of 14 years, and you're like, okay, this is how I've looked at it. This is how I've understood it. I see it now being lived. what are the things, what are the elements I need to put and put in and, you know, make it the way it is supposed to be. That has been really, really a strong, has made a strong impression on me.
So there are many different bits and pieces that make up what we call the priesthood. And what would be your favorite aspect of the priesthood? Like, if you could break it down, what's your favorite thing to do? I've always been curious because I've never really asked a priest that question. I was like, I don't know, like, if I was a priest, would I, like, what would be my favorite part? Mass, adoration? Would it be just setting up the altar? Would it be my daily prayer? And I was just curious, like, what is it for you?
Celebrating Mass. You see, every other function can be done by some other person. I always say that being the sexual bishop, being the whatever function you want to give, anybody can do it. But sorry, anybody cannot be a priest. And what is central in our lives, the celebration of the Mass, making Jesus to come down. Who am I to call Jesus? And when I say come, he comes without hesitating. That for me has been the one thing, and that is why nothing will stop me from celebrating. Except I get so sick that I can, it's waking up always and walking up to that altar and celebrating, bringing Jesus down and sharing him to others and to myself. That for me is the one thing that moves me. First, I acknowledge my unworthiness, and then God obeys. Whoa.
Pretty deep. So, obviously, you talked about you can do that one thing that nobody else can do. And as a priest, you kind of have this leadership role, this father role of a certain parish. And so, while still being that leader, how do you still try to show people that you are, you know, on the same level with them, that you can still relate with them, and even though that you still want to keep that leadership and respecting role, but you don't want to seem like, you know, that you're trying to be, you know, boastful towards them, but how do you relate to them still in that human nature type of way and let them know that, hey, you're going through the same things that they're going through?
I think the watchword here is humility. Christ humbled himself and became man like you and me. Who am I? So it's just humility. Humble yourself. One, you don't know it all. You need others to do other technical things. So listen, you are not a solution box where you say press and the solution comes out. No, you need to listen. I mean, in all, when you look at it, it boils down to humility. Christ was there, everybody could reach him, okay? There were no restrictions and no, yes, we tried to put barriers. Those barriers is for us to respect one another's, you know, call it zones and things like that. But again, if I'm a priest and you can't have access to me, then why am I a priest? Why? The humility is in the fact that I am able to realize that I am that one person that everybody should be able to get to. And that is why among you students, I think I've tried as much as I can to make known to everyone that you have access to Father Mugaga. There is nothing stopping you. Those who have discovered, I'm making use of it. I don't stop anybody. I'm friends with everybody. And you can get to me as close as you want to get close, you know? And the truth is, human relationship and human nature has made it in such a way that some people you're familiar with, you really get close to, other people is just a hello hi, and you don't have a problem with them. That's how human nature is. So there are people you get close to maybe because they've told you their story, because you've interacted. If we're playing basketball, maybe you play basketball with them often, and there are people you joke with easily. You know, those things bring about the closeness. But my point is, you should be able to be that one person that everybody can reach out to. And that's why I feel terrible when, if you have to say something and you start thinking, oh, A is close to Father Mugaga, let's go through A to get to Father Mugaga, I feel bad. Then I'm missing out. And there's something wrong. you should be able to, hey, pick up your phone. Father, I'm this person. I have this problem. Oh, I would need to see you for this or that or the other. And boom, we go do it. If I can, I got it. So, that is, it, so right? The watch word, humble yourself. Because what do we say? With you, I'm a Christian. For you, I'm a priest.
And then going back to what you said with Father Tom, how much did you have to really dive into humility even more, going from being a lead pastor to an associate pastor? Was there ever times where you're like, it's really hard right now that I have to have this leader above me, and that humility aspect of that, you know, that new journey, that new challenge that you were just embarked on, like, would you say 2 years ago when you came here? So
what I would say is, personally, I've never been someone who really bothers about being in charge. Because there's a lot of questions, that goes into being in charge. But when you are executing and you're taking, you know, receiving orders and you're executing, I think that's the far easier job. Because if something goes wrong, I'm like, go ask Father Tom. I don't know what's going on. Okay. But generally, I would say it's never really been an issue for me, because if Jesus calls us to humility and calls us to, you know, to humble ourselves, that's a true test of that humility. Having to have somebody and listening and following the lead, because the point is following the lead. And coming to that realization that you don't know it all. Some other person may have a better way of doing it, and follow that lead. His apostles followed him. He calls on us to follow him. So why shouldn't we follow the lead of the pastor? So it boils back to one thing, humility. I don't become more a priest because I'm the pastor. I'm not less a priest because I'm the associate. Somebody must lead. But all we all have to do is follow.
So one of my favorite things about the Catholic faith is the washing of the feet, because it's when Jesus really showed and expressed humility and humbleness. Like, who am I? Not like he's just giving himself to wash their feet, and it's kind of like a neat moment. He's like, I'm your leader, but I can still wash your feet. And I love going to Holy Thursday Mass and witnessing that. Is there any part of that Triduum weekend that really just is profound to you, that you find, wow, I think this is awesome, like, I love doing this?
You just put your finger on it, the washing of the feet. That's what we are called upon to do. As priests, what else? Wash the feet of the rest. He that is elders must be at the service of everyone. And remember, the Easter Triduum is one long event broken down in 3 days, okay? So that fact of going down, I have always imagined the feet of the apostles had some crazy sandals and maybe some really dirty feet and, you know, stinking with all some kind of... Sorry, my imagination is always very crazy.
That's awesome.
Then he went down and washed it. That for me is very profound. And that is why, personally, I'm like, okay, get me into the most messed up situation, the most smelling situation, the most stinking situation, the most, let me be able to wash it. That's my duty. And I jokingly say each time I'm going to listen to confessions, that I'm going to collect trash. A trash man is going to do his job. He has to go pick up trash. Going down. He did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped. He humbled himself, taking the form of what? A servant. That is what is central for me.
You talked about, you know, the eldest serving everyone else. As a priest, you have a lot of responsibility. And for, you know, for us, for all the students here, for all the parishioners, But at the end of the day, you know, you still have to think about yourself a little bit too.
Yeah.
How do you balance that responsibility of, you know, leading an entire parish and then, you know, still worrying about your own relationship with God and not just about everybody else's?
I remember on Holy Thursday, I asked that the community and you all should pray for us because we are not supposed to be those signposts that point the way for everyone and not getting. I used that analogy in a bit to say that. The signpost never really gets in. That signpost standing in front of the church, saying St. Francis of Assisi's Catholic Church, whatever, in front of the church, does it ever go into church? It doesn't. But we are all working in such a way, or we are expected to work in such a way, that we lead everyone by ourselves trying to also get in. Because the challenges that I have in my own life, or I also have challenges in my own life in relation to the faith. And that is why I always say that God has given us an extra blessing with the fact of sitting at the confessional and listening to confessions. Because sometimes somebody is sharing something and you're like, whoa, I can really relate with that. So it throws it back to you in a bit to say, I'm not struggling alone. I'm struggling along with others. So the fine balance always is also trying to make time for yourself in relation to private prayer, in relation to taking care of your health, in relation all that, putting it together. Because if you are leading and there's something wrong with you, they say, kill the shepherd and you scatter the sheep. And you cannot give what you don't have. So you must always have that refill in a bit to do what? To give. And that is why we go for little seminars, like presently I'm taking a course on campus, all in a bit to build up that reservoir such that you can, you know, share with others.
It's funny because the Catholic Church is universal, and I often find it, me myself, making this mistake as well. I find myself kind of forgetting that the priests are kind of just as much of a part of the Catholic Church as we are, and they're just as human as we are. And it's like, wow, they're going through their own struggles too, but they're still leading us through it. And so it's like, when you said it, pray for us too, I remember because I was at that homily and I was like, well, shoot. I was like, they're people too. I should be praying for them as well. And I was like, wow, I kind of just never really put it in that way. And so I just remember sitting there thinking, I was like, wow. Because it was like a really good way to like level both sides. And I just remember sitting there and like, wow, I really, like, this brought me back to the washing of the feet again with humility and humbleness. And it was like, this is what the disciples must have felt when Jesus washed their feet. And because it was during Easter too, and it was like everything was back to back to back. And I just sat there and I remember just thinking, I was like, whoa, that was neat to kind of hear it put that way. And so ever since then, it's kind of just been on my mind. And I wanted to thank you for saying that, because it was definitely something that made me just sit and think, one of those God moments. So, but yeah, thank you. I want to dive a little more into your priesthood. So you get to wear all these different vestments and everything. And some of them are a little more flashy than others, depending on how it goes. And I was an altar server in Coleman. It's about an hour and 15 minutes away from here. And I don't know if you've ever met Abbot Marcus or any of the priests from Coleman. Maybe Father Linus said he may have done a Eucharistic procession here. But I would serve, and Abbot Marcus would always be like, I would be doing the incense, and he'd always be like, make me look good. And I'd be like, yes, sir, I got you. So what's your favorite vestment that you have that you get to wear?
That's a good question. I think the rose vestment everybody thinks looks good on me, and I think I love it too. But you get to wear it only once, mm-hmm. You know. So, but I mean, the colors, they really... Each is unique and particular to the season and the event and what is being celebrated, you know. So I wouldn't say I really have a preference or some particular, you know, just that ability to vest, you know, have those vestments on and go celebrate for me. It's always something, it just blows my mind, I must say. The colors, you know, today I wore red. Red looks good on me. In ordinary time, we're green.
Mm-hmm.
Purple comes up in Lent, and you know, white is still universal, that it's good, that cuts across. So it's all, I would say there's really no that's that vestment that you say, oh, you have, you know, no. I just need to vest.
I'm gonna ask another question. What is your, who's your patron saint and why did you choose them?
Actually, I'm named after one of the martyrs of Uganda.
Okay.
Mugaga was one of the martyrs of Uganda.
Did not know that.
That's why, I mean, everyone will ask me, what's your Christian name? What's your, I mean, I've always had that since I got to understand the story behind, you know, because you always hear of Charles Lwanga and companions. So it is the Charles Lwanga which is pronounced, but one of the companions, one of them was Mugaga, and Mugaga has, I mean, I've just talked to my name in a bit to say, okay, you give your life, can I be that reflective of that name that was given to me? And I trust in the fact, I mean, there's a lot that has happened around me, which I could say through his intercession, I've been able to receive, because he was one of the smallest among the martyrs. And I think, I want to say, his offering of himself at that age, at that tender age, was some kind of purity, you know. Had a purifying effect, which has always, you know, had a strong impact on me.
Going back on the theme of favorites, is there a certain time in, you know, the year of the church that you are, you know, just in love with, whether it's the Easter season, you know, the Advent season? Is there a particular time where you just...
How can you not be stuck to the Easter Triduum? How? That is the church. That one long event in 3 days, that whole Holy Week, if we didn't have that, what are we doing here? Why am I a priest? Each year is always like a religious experience. Reliving it, there is always something particular. I mean, there is, I don't know how to verbalize the experience. I don't know how to put it in words. But the awe that goes with it, and the events, and if you remember on my homily of Palm Sunday, I was very clear, anybody that does not make time for the Easter Triduum, I really don't know why you're Catholic. I can't understand.
Yeah, I was talking to him about it, and that's my favorite time of the Catholic year, because it's the coolest experience ever when you can make all the masses, like Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Vigil. And this was the first time I went to the Tenebrae. And I thought that was a really neat service too, because I've never been before. But it was like, it's almost like a whole refresh. It's like a chance for you to be like, this is the reminder that I needed. Like, this is why I believe, this is it right here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that it's so neat just that we have those 3 days of just full religious experience. So.
Well, Father, we thank you for your time. Could, do you know, just give us, and our audience and us, just, you know, just one final message before, you know, we end this episode.
Well, you know my message to you all. I still go back. Never forget. Christianity is an action word. Witness to what you believe. You don't need to go out there fighting with every other person. No, live the life. They will see and they will believe. Thank you.
We thank you, Father Mugaga, for joining us for this episode. And thank you all for listening or watching. And God bless.